Hey everyone, Cameron here. Thanks for tuning in as always. This episode is brought to you by Mad Rabbit Tattoo, the leader in tattoo care. I'd appreciate if you could subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. In this episode, we feature Lou Alexander, who is a former NFL player and current tech sales leader and entrepreneur. Lou is the founder of the brand Big Ass, Big A88 Jogger, which is a clothing line that stands to inspire those individuals to embrace who they are and take pride in being the best at whatever they do. Lou brings some great energy and has an incredible and inspiring personal story. And what really sticks out to me about Lou is his passion for serving others and his intellectual curiosity around understanding people and helping them achieve their goals. And Lou also exhibits hard work and dedication like no other. He's lost over 100 pounds and now leads a community running club. Make sure to check out the show notes for ways to connect with Lou, but for now, let's hop into the show. Lou Alexander, great to have you on Life After the Line here, man. Would be great, just as an initial introduction to hear about you and what you're doing and what all you're building and involved with right now.
Absolutely, man. Well, first off, thank you for having me on. Definitely excited. Thank you for also giving us this platform as ex-offensive linemen to be able to share our stories, man, because we are known as the ones that are always unselfish. And to be able to have a platform to express what we're doing today, man, is awesome. So first off, man, I want to say thanks. Like you mentioned, my name is Lou Alexander. And I'll take a little step back. You know, I'm from Lynnwood, California. If some that are not familiar, Lynnwood is a city outside of Los Angeles, a little bit east of Los Angeles. And it's right next door to the city named Compton, California, which a lot of people know in rap videos and things of that nature. But we are literally right next door, sister cities. And, you know, what I'm doing currently right now is after football, I was able to find my calling in leadership, in sales leadership at that. I had no tech experience coming out of the NFL. All I knew, I just wanted to put on a nice suit and a nice watch and be able to lead people and kind of help grow skill set on a day to day. And with that being said, you know, currently I work at a tech company where I manage up to 14 individual contributors. What that means is that, you know, they're all accustomed and they're all managing revenue on a daily basis. So their pure job is to make sure that they're driving, you know, the company initiatives from a revenue standpoint. My job is to put that strategy in place. But with that being said, on my leadership end, I've been able to parlay that into being a development or professional development, as I call it, speaker for universities, but also a public speaker in the corporate space. My path was very, very unorthodox from being the youngest, I would say, director of sales that is also diverse in my area to be able to accomplish that in 8 years. I mean, it was unheard of for a lot of individuals in the tech space. So now I'm able to kind of share that knowledge with a lot of individuals that are coming up in college, but ultimately as well, helping other managers and helping them how to manage people. And we'll kind of talk about kind of how that whole thing works out as well as we get along this podcast. But that's what I'm currently doing now, but also got my hands tied into my clothing brand as well. So I got entrepreneurial endeavors as well with Big Ass Joggers. It's inspired by my weight loss. And the inspiration behind it was inspiring people to be their biggest selves at whatever they do. I was able to lose 100 pounds after playing athletics. And I want to give people that same motivation, that same level of inspiration to tell them that they can do things unapologetically, but being their biggest self at whatever they do. So yeah, man, I'm doing a lot and it's awesome to be doing a lot. But yeah, it's great to, yeah, I'll stay busy. I'll tell you that for sure.
I love to hear that. And I think it's great that you're able to leverage everything you've done in these different aspects of life. And it's evident that you keep leveling up in different spaces, which is so important to get that effective compounding and just leveraging your experience. This is super helpful context to have what you're doing now, but would love to take a couple of step backs and just learn more about your upbringing and what role did football play in your life as a kid? And also, what was it like being the youngest of 9 siblings?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. People ask me about that all the time. And, you know, my upbringing was very, 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 in lack of a better terms, I would say not controversial, but it was very impactful to what I do today from a relentless standpoint. And I think the first word to describe that is it took a lot of grit to come through my childhood. Being blessed with a strong mother, first off, and being able to raise 9 kids was truly paramount and played a huge role in my life for how I attack things on a day-to-day currently. Growing up with 9 siblings, I think I never had to have any friends outside of the house, right? So for me personally, I could always look to my brother or my sister to be my friend, and we had a tight knit because we had a basketball team plus a couple of other starters on the way. So it was good for us to be able to have that cohesiveness in the house. But, you know, growing up in Linwood, it was like any other inner city. It's tough, right? It's poverty stricken. You have a lot of obstacles and a lot of things that are in front of you that derails you. And, you know, I was able to find some bit of guidance and help through sports and athletics. And it's funny because I grew up as a very, very overweight kid. And when I say very overweight, to the point where I couldn't even play tackle football when I was a young kid. So I resorted to playing baseball. Baseball was my first true love, actually. So I didn't really get to love football until my 9th grade year of high school is when that was actually introduced to me. And that inspiration came from my older brother. My older brother, man, he was one of the best football players to this day. And I'm not saying that because he's my brother, but I'm saying that because he truly, truly was one of those guys that you always wanted on your team. He showed you grit. He showed you determination. He showed you athleticism. He showed you all the things on and off the field that you wanted. So he gave me that inspiration to really say, hey, I want to play that sport. I love the contact. I love the camaraderie. I love the team orientation of it. I really want to play that sport. And he was able to really put that color and shine that light on athletics for me. And Rich really got my first start at playing football after seeing him play in high school. And the role that that played for me, man, is it kept me out of trouble. You know, growing up in Linwood is it's easy to get in trouble, right? You know, I always hear people talk about it's easy to be successful when you're around successful people, right? But there's always another flip side to that. There's easy to go down the wrong path when that's where your environment is. So when football came into my life, that's all I knew. I was able to kind of hone in on the sports, and my newfound family was being respectful for the people that were playing aside of me and along me, because I knew that they were counting on me week in and week out. So, you know, that kind of took my life full circle. And I think early on in my life, it taught me that structure, which carried on to a lot in my life going forward.
Love that. Love that. Did you have any coaches or mentors, or maybe a guy who was a senior when you were a freshman or something along those lines who was really impactful for you, or really just your brother who inspired you?
Yeah, I had a coach until this day. We always stay connected. And he was my high school football coach. He was one of those guys that were very selfless. And a lot of things that he showed me in life in general, from a standpoint of understanding that football is not the only thing that you have in this world, right? There, it's just a means to an end, right? And he was able to show me that early on. And he took this kid from the inner city because he was completely different color. And when I talk about this inclusiveness, right, this was a male that, you know, come from a completely different background than me, you know, very, very, very successful, very well known in his world. And he didn't have to put in the time that he did with me. And he really showed me that he was willing to devote something to my life to help propel me to that next step. And I mean, that coach, man, I thank him to this day, because not only in football did he give me and show me grace from a standpoint of helping me there, but he actually helped me in life still to this day from some of the things that I was able to learn from him. So shout out to Coach Root, man, if you're listening to this.
Love to hear that. And I'm sure that he's very proud of everything that you've done to this day. So I guess what was your journey from starting as a freshman then to being recruited to college? And how did you land in junior college initially?
Yeah, so my journey, it was unorthodox to say the least. And I think I talked about this before, but my journey was very, very difficult. And it was difficult because, you know, growing up where I was at, there was not a lot of kids getting recruited at this school that I was at. We were a low division school, not a Power Five school. And we played against a lot of, you know, out of league teams that were really good, and we did well against them. How I ended up in junior college was after high school, I graduated high school at 17. So I didn't start to really come into my body and develop until I was probably 18 or 19, I would say. So I was a late bloomer, to really say the least, you know, lack of a better words. I was a late bloomer. So when I was in high school, I mean, I was killing. I played D tackle in high school, and I was always blessed with athleticism. They used to call me Sweet Feet Lou because I always had fast feet. And that was like my thing, right? So in high school, I would always get recruiters come and say, hey, you got some of the fastest feet that I think I've ever seen. But we don't know if D tackle is your primary position. And I was really good at it. I mean, dude, I would have 2-3 TFLs a game. I mean, I was going in probably an average a sack a game. I mean, it was I was doing really well. Junior college gave me the platform to step into understanding the ins and outs of being diverse. And what I mean by that is you have to have a lot of different tools in your tool belt when you are playing in those next levels, right? So you just can't play one position. And I was able to go to junior college and I was introduced to offensive line. And I didn't start playing offensive line until my senior year of high school. So I really only had 1 year of experience before going to junior college and playing offensive line. So when I transitioned over to junior college, and I hated it, man. I can tell you right now, I did not want to go junior college. I was getting recruited by a HBCU, Grambling State. And I was like, hey, I'm just going to go to Grambling. My mom, I go back to her. She was the main and the pivotal point where she told me, there is better opportunity if you go to prep school and help your body and your mind. And I think I took that to heart. It was the mind part of it. I needed to develop mentally because the next level, that's all it's about. It's about mentality. It's not necessarily about how physical you can be. And so when I took that year to develop, I had a lot of coaches just wrap their arms around me to help develop me because they saw the potential. And, you know, I watch these shows, Lance Chance U, and they talk about East Mississippi and all these things. And they do a really good job at capturing what junior college is about. Because when you're going to school and you have no food, you have no money, and you're still going to practice and still have to go and play on Saturday, that can do a lot to an individual. But luckily, you know, I was able to have some coaches that were willing to take me under their wing and say, hey, if you devote yourself to this for 2 years, you will get a Power Five scholarship and be able to go to the next level. And I did that, man. I took their advice. And after a couple of years playing junior college, I ended up ending as an All-American both years. My first year as an offensive lineman and my second year, I ended up having 26 offers coming out of junior college. A lot of Pac-10 schools. And I ended up choosing Syracuse after because they just fit what I was looking for at the time, man. And I think that journey I wouldn't take that journey back at all. That was probably the most pivotal journey in my life that I hit. And I attribute my success today to junior college for sure.
I think that demonstrates a lot of maturity from your 18-year-old self to be willing to listen to your mother's wisdom and to. It almost reminds me of how a quarterback, they might not start them their first year in the league,
right?
So that they can have time to learn and go under the wings of the folks they need to and to progress. And kudos to you for having that patience and willingness to take the time to build and then really get a launch pad by the time you got to Syracuse.
So
coming out with 26 offers, why'd you pick Syracuse? And are you happy with that decision to this day?
Yeah, as you see all the orange behind me, I am so happy that I chose Syracuse. First off, Syracuse, it gave me access to who is now my wife. I was able to meet my wife going to Syracuse. But also, too, I think the history that Syracuse was able to articulate for me and show me and teach me while I was there, but also too, what they embodied as an institution. There's a lot of institutions that wanted me, right? They were like, hey, you can come here. I was actually originally committed to Baylor University. And coaching staff had changed at Baylor, and I decided to decommit last minute. And it's funny because Syracuse is actually at the bottom of my list. It was UCLA, Oregon, Auburn, Baylor, and then Syracuse was my fifth. And so all those teams I just mentioned before that we all know, they have elite five stars in front of you already. So my playing time to go in there, and I only had 2 years to play, was slim to none, or I would probably get 1 year to really showcase what I wanted to do. So Syracuse gave me the ability to come right in, and I was able to play my first year. I was able to start 9 games my first year, and I played in 11. And then also the community, man. People that are from the Northeast, they live, breathe sports and athletics, and they love it. And if your team is doing well, especially in upstate New York, the red carpet is in front of you. And it's from a support standpoint, and being 3,000 miles away from home, not knowing anyone, I needed that support. I needed some attachment, a family that was going to help drive me and help keep me consistent and help keep me disciplined as I'm on this journey. And Syracuse gave me all of that. The coach, from the coaching staff to the people that were my professors, to the people that were helping me with lunch hall, to everyone that was around me, they helped me really grow into a man at Syracuse. And I think that, yeah, man, I don't regret that decision at all. It was the best decision of my life, for sure.
And so when did you know you'd go to the NFL? I guess, was that something after that year you started 9 games, you're like, this is real, I can go do this? Or what did the journey to the NFL look like?
It was actually the opposite, you know, of what you just mentioned. After that 9 games, you know, there's a lot of politics in football that we don't know about before we actually get into the sport. And for me, I didn't understand the inner workings of athletics. So I didn't understand, you know, the agents, and I didn't understand, you know, all the things from the sports analysts and media and all those things. I was just a kid playing football. So I didn't realize all the things that were happening behind the scenes that I wasn't in charge of. All I knew was I can go out on Saturdays and play the best game. But it wasn't until my senior year where I was like, wow, I'm starting to see this separation of talent from myself and others. This can be something. I can actually take this and go towards it. As any kid, we always have the aspirations to play at the next level, as any kid. But I didn't realize how real it was until I started to see my friends go to the next level. So when I started to see, you know, an offensive lineman that played next to me, he gets drafted 6th round, he goes to the Saints. I'm like, wow, okay, this is a guy I was just playing with, and he's getting drafted. There's no, I know from a standpoint of talent, we're right there. So I can at least get picked in the 6th round. And then a coach came to me and he said, hey, there's coaches looking at you from the league. You need to get a couple more game films under you to show them certain areas that you are weak in. So for me, for instance, just to give the listeners a little bit of an overview, as an offensive lineman, you know, the first step is everything. And the way that you have your hand placement and position is everything, because I need to push that defender into a gap so that way I give my running back or whomever leeway to hit that hole. And I sucked at getting my head across a defender and getting him on the other side to push him in another direction for my running back. So NFL scouts used to say, hey, man, that's what you need to get better at. And so when I started to get better at that and start to be consistent, I started to see this change of narrative. And all of a sudden, I started to see coaches come and say, hey, you got a good shot to come play. And after that, man, I worked my tail off every single day, first to show up, last to leave. And I wasn't leaving until I actually was undrafted or drafted out of college.
Mm-hmm. And you went to the Saints initially. What was your experience like with your time in the NFL? And what's your favorite moment in reflection of that?
Yeah. So, you know, it was very – my time in the NFL was, again, I go back to the politics side of it, it was very short-lived. It was a short stint. I like to tell people I had a cup of coffee, but I didn't have the full, I didn't have a couple of cups of it. So, you know, as much as I would have loved to have a 6, 7-year, 8-year career, that just wasn't in the cards for me. But what I can say is that my time in the league was every bit of amazing. And I used the league to learn from people that were ahead of me and looking at them as places that I wanted to go. And so, you know, when I went into the league, I looked at it as an opportunity to learn. There was guys like, you know, Marvin Colston. There were guys like Jari Evans. There were guys like Tavon Armstead. There were guys like Mark Ingram. There was a whole list of guys that were there that knew exactly how the ecosystem of the NFL worked. And all I wanted to do was to be a sponge. I wanted to learn from them. I wanted to understand, how do you go within this business? How do you sustain success in this business? But also, what are some things that separate you apart that just doesn't make you an athlete or a football player? And I think more so, I learned more about life in the NFL than I did about playing football. And I think that was the biggest thing for me. Now, granted, what I did learn is that it was all mental. It was 98% mental. The NFL, these guys know tendencies. These guys know film. They know all those different things. It's not necessarily come and be the most athletic. So I think my time there really taught me how to grow into being a man, but also grow into learning how to study and understand the game even deeper than just watching the player that was I was lining up against. So definitely taught me a lot, man. And I love a lot of the things that it gave me from a quality standpoint of life, and also to the opportunity to be able to say that I did it.
And so how did you transition to Catch Point? Did the NFL influence that? Or so you're sort of fresh out of time with the Saints. Like, how did you decide on how to start your next endeavor? And what was that like?
One word I always use is curiosity. I transitioned by accident into technology, truly, truly. And it was never in the plans. It was never in my plans to go and be the next tech leader. And when I say tech leader, tech business leader, run teams, that was never in the plans. I just knew that I wanted to do something. And to be quite honest, it was a monetary motivation. That was the initial stage. It was like, hey, whatever I can do to live a lifestyle like an NFL player, I want to do it. But I'm going to take you back to a story where I met a guy on a plane and I saw him dressed, I mean, to the nines, man. Nice suit, nice watch, nice shoes. I mean, he had the tie clip on. He had all these things that I just saw as admiring. I admired the guy. And I saw him, he sat down next to me and I'm in coach and, you know, I'm 6'4" and at the time I'm 330 and I'm crammed up in the seat and I'm in a middle seat at that. So I'm crammed up in this middle seat, but luckily he came and sat right next to me. And so I saw him on his computer and I talk about being a sponge, right? And understanding what you want to do around you. And I saw him on his computer actually typing. So I just truly asked him a question. And, you know, that one question was, can you help me? And he asked and he paused for a little bit, you know, this huge dude in the middle seat asking, you know, can you help me? And I'm flying to the Northeast at that time. So at the time I was living in Los Angeles, but I said, my girlfriend, who's my wife now, you know, she was living in Boston. So I said, hey, I'm coming to Boston because I want to, you know, start my career and whatever that is, I'm flying to Boston. So I was flying to Boston and I happened to see this guy and I just asked him, can you help me? And he looked at me and he was like, how can I help you? And I said, hey, I just want to understand, what is it that you do? I end up understanding that he was a board adversary and he was able to advocate on behalf of other tech companies. And that was intriguing to me because he served as a liaison between the company and the board. And so I wanted to understand, what is that? So he was in the tech space and he had a couple opportunities in the tech space. And he shot me over to this one company where I actually started, and it's not listed, and I have my LinkedIn up, but it was the company name was Power Home Remodeling, and we sold roof and windows, knocking door to door. That was my first job out after the NFL, knocking door to door. So to be on this high of the NFL to automatically take this nosedive into knocking door to door, being 6'4", showing up to someone's doorstep and saying, hey, you want to buy a roof and windows? I was expecting more doors to be slammed in my face because I would have slammed the door in my own face. But it was very, very quite enlightening, man. But it taught me a lot of true principles. And that transition from Power Home Remodeling, I transitioned into Catch Point, where I first got my in-office job, where I learned kind of the systems and the processes that sales teach you. And that's what I was able to learn from Catch Point. And that's kind of how that transition happened. So I went through a lot before that Catch Point transition to get there, for sure.
Yeah, it's so interesting in life how, you know, just putting yourself out there and just creating these sort of random opportunities where there's really no downside at all. Like the worst the guy could tell you is, hey man, I'm busy, I'm going to go to work. Ask the next guy that you sit next to.
Right.
But when you do that enough times in life, you find that like half the people actually put themselves out there and genuinely want to help you. And
sure.
So
yeah.
I think that's so sharp to do that everywhere. As long as it's sort of a karma thing almost, you know, if you give that to the universe and if you pay that forward in your life, when people come to you and ask for help or ask for guidance or opportunity, you know, it's like you give what you get. And so when you take on those low risk bets where you just ask someone to go get a coffee or ask someone what they do, or just take a genuine interest in someone, it can go so far and helping both yourself, and I'm sure the guy benefited from helping you out as well. So
exactly. Well, football taught me never be afraid to ask the question, right? And I think we get tied up so much in that where we're afraid to be wrong, right? And you know, I always say this to individuals that I teach all the time. It's easy to articulate a fact, right? Anyone can give you a fact, but it's hard to articulate a feeling. And you know, for me, I was in the game of articulating how I felt. And I think that curiosity and articulating how I felt and wearing my heart on my sleeves and my emotions on my sleeve, that gave a lot of individuals access, but gave me access to a lot of individuals as well, because now they can see that there was going to be some level of reciprocity there once I actually do right by them. If I ask them the question and understanding what they do, my value in return is to be of service in however I can do so. And I think that's what was able to really help in my trajectory, is being of service, but not of being afraid to ask that question when I am presented the opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's a very sharp way to put that. How would you say your goals have changed from when you were just starting knocking door to door, selling roofs and windows to where you are now? Do you feel like you're still tracking on the same goals and it's chipping away at it, or have you had some major mindset shifts?
You know what? I say this, the foundation at which you approach things stays the same as you continue to evolve, right? The house is there. You have the house and you have the foundation laid. But the extensions of the house that you build is what you add on, right? It's the things that you add on, far as the windows or the extra room or the things of that nature. So when I look at my goals, I look at my goals as ever evolving. And my goals never stay the same because my circumstances and surroundings change. So for me, everything changed, right? And every year I've been able to hit these certain benchmarks that allows me to change and make greater goals. And if you're stuck as one goal or keeping that one mindset of goals, your evolution, it stays stagnant. So for me, I have to keep the foundation same and the principles the same, but my goals have now evolved because I'm no longer knocking on doors. I'm now managing a team. So it's not only my goals that I have to take in best interest. I have to actually account for all the other goals of other individuals, because they're helping me, or they're allowing me to help them achieve what their goals are. So now it's twofold for me. Now I have goals of myself personally of saying, hey, I want to continue to knock down these barriers and continue to be the best at whatever I do every single day, like in football, right? We want to have a undefeated record. And that's how I feel every time I approach my day is, how do I have a consistent undefeated record? But now on top of that, I have to think about, how do I support other individuals and help shift their mindset, so now their goals become a part of mine and we are all thinking on the same type of playing field and we can all grow from there. So the goals change because the times change, but the foundational principles stay the same.
I totally agree with that. How would you say that your approach has changed as you've gone from being a salesman yourself to being more of a manager now and being more so in a role of enabling individuals versus selling outside? And how have you dealt with that transition and the leveling up that you're doing?
Absolutely. So whatever you've done as an individual contributor, as a salesperson yourself, as a manager, all that goes out the window, right? And the only thing that you can draw from is, how do you help different individuals in their individual needs? Not what you've done to be successful. How do you get them to be successful? So what's changed for me is that I had to learn the art of people, right? And I've always understood people. I was very good at a young age of talking and having conversations and articulate and curious and all those different attributes that kind of play in alignment with being a great leader, right? But what I had to improve about is listening, right? So now as a sales leader, I'm listening more than I'm talking. And that might sound crazy because they're like, well, aren't you supposed to direct people? Yes, absolutely. But when I open my mouth is going to be open with value and substance of putting them in the right position. And how I manage them is letting them understand that I'm in service to you. And as an individual sales rep, I was in service to myself. So all I cared about is my goals. I didn't care about what the guy was doing next to me, right? All I cared about is the goals that Lou Alexander had to achieve. But as a sales leader now, I have to worry about the goals that others have to achieve. But also, too, I have to worry about their development. Because now what you just mentioned is enablement. I'm helping them progress their career to be the next Lou Alexander. So that is even a more challenge. So if I cared about only my goals, no one would get anything done because it's only my goals. My goals is to make $1 million, but how I get there is completely different than how you view my goals, right? So that's where you have to now take a step back and you have to come out of your own body and kind of be like a different individual to give insight and perspective that is directed toward those individuals and what's going to help them in their maturation.
So let's say I'm a newly hired sales analyst under you and your group.
Yeah.
What would you do early on to better understand me and to build trust and to build a relationship and to have us aligned and rowing the boat in the same way, moving forward? What's that look like for you when you bring someone into the team?
Absolutely. So first I want to understand your motivation. Right? Why are you here? You know, and I'm okay with whatever answer you give me, but I just want you to be authentic and I want you to be clear about your intentions. And so when I understand why you are here, that gives me the opportunity to now help assist you. Because what happens is we have a lot of individuals that come on board and I say, okay, well, what motivates you? And their motivations are very broad, right? There are so many different layers of it. Well, hey, I want to go on vacation. Well, hey, I want to buy a house. Hey, I want to do all these things. And that's fine. You should have all these dreams, but I like to narrow it down. So what I like to give my people is I want to understand, how are we chipping away at the iceberg? How is it going to be chip by chip? And what are we trying to chip off every time we hit into the iceberg, right? It's details. Greatness, they rely on the details, right? And that's what I always like to understand is, what is your detail, right? What is your 30, 60, 90 day plan in detail? What are you going to do day one to day 90, right? That's what I want to understand. Let me worry about managing you And then the process will come after I understand how to manage you, but I need to understand you as an individual before I understand your skill set, right? So those are two different things. And what managers, I think, sometimes fall short of is that they come on board and they have a guy that comes under him that's working for him, and they just want to dig deep into how they're doing things at the company, but not necessarily understanding how that individual fits within the structure of the company. And that's what I like to do is, where is your fit? Just like football, right? What is the role you're playing? As an offensive lineman, I knew that once we go on a screen and I'm screaming down the field and I'm trying to hit a safety or a linebacker, it's not my job to run the ball. It's my job to make sure that I'm blocking for the guy behind me. So for me, I use that same approach to block for the guy behind me, and the guys that are behind me are my team. So if I understand how you make a cut, if I understand how you run up the field and you hit your stride on the sideline, that's the same way in sales. I can now understand how you're able to get on a phone call and introduce yourself, how you're able to articulate the value of my product. All those different things you're teaching, because it's a process, and I want to learn those specifics before we actually go to the broader things of accomplishing the goals for the business.
And what qualities would you say go the farthest in being a good salesperson? And beyond that, what do you feel is more nature versus nurture? And who would maybe on a nature basis be a good fit for a sales role at what you're doing?
Yeah, no, 100%. The individuals that I love, they have one attribute, and I say this all the time, is they're self-starters, right? Self-starters, they're able to rely on themselves, no matter the circumstance, good or bad, to get the job done. Naturally, in human instincts, we are so lazy because we rely on other people to do our work for us, and we rely on the short way of doing it. So if I told you right now, hey, you can get to LA in the next 2 hours, yeah, you're gonna say it's efficiency, you're gonna take that 2 hours. But if I told you, hey, you can get to LA if you lay over in Houston and you may have a meeting in Houston, and then after Houston, you may have to fly to Chicago and have something else, you're going to avoid that passage. So I'm looking at people that are not afraid to go the long way around. And when I find those individuals that are not afraid to go the long way around and they're patient and they're self-starters, they end up being the best salespeople. Because why? They're not rushing to prove to you that they have something that they're wanting to sell for their agenda. They're willing to wait and prove that they're trying to help you specifically and appease to your needs, not necessarily theirs. So I think the self-starters, man, are the biggest key to anyone that I look for, is being a self-starter, and also to me being able to find what you've done in the past that's brought you to that. And also too, I'm biased. I love athletes. I love athletes, man. Athletes have the best tenacity, they have the grit, they have the determination, because the structure's there. I don't have to worry about the structure. And if I don't have to worry about the structure, it's easy for me to manage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the self-starter piece, you know, said differently, like being just a resourceful person. Yeah. And, you know, if you have the motivation and the tenacity and the determination to do something, yeah. If you have that resourceful, creative, thoughtful way to just get, you know, there's just people who get the job done.
Sure.
And if you pair that, I'm sure, in a role of sales with being able to empathize and to put yourself in the other person's shoes and understand their needs and like you were saying, of articulating appropriately, like what you guys are offering, you know, when you put that all together, I'm sure you get a great combination and someone you're really happy to be developing and to be working with.
Well, 100%, man, because I tell individuals all the time, not just in sales, but in life, there has to be value in conversation, right? It's reciprocity. It has to be an exchange of information, you know, because we all have different experiences. We all have these different experiences where you may have been taught by someone completely different than I have been taught about sales, right? But I think the self-starter and curiosity portion, it allows you to understand the conclusion of an individual's life and also taking that to be valuable to that individual without having to go through the journey that they went through. And so that's the same thing with sales, is how do I ask you a question to understand your journey to get me in that same arena so you can give me this synopsis of your life, and then I'm able to say, wow, I've lived that through your eyes. And so I can be there and I'm able to help assist that. And it's an easy alley-oop. And the salespeople that get that and they get that level of questioning, they do well. They do very well.
I totally agree with that. I'd like to shift gears a little bit toward your health.
Yes.
You mentioned hopping on that plane at 6'4", 330 pounds or whatever it was. Where are you now, and what's that journey look like, and how did you step into addressing your health?
So 2016 was like life changing for me. And it was life changing because I started to see a lot of the effects of eating 10,000 calories a day as a football player, right? And one of those effects were high blood pressure. Coming home from work after a full day and seeing your fingers swollen and your feet swollen, and you're 26 at the time. I was 26. I was like, there's no way that health should look like this for me. And what motivated me was I was walking through the grocery store with my girlfriend at the time, who's my wife, and there was a mirror on a side, like a window, not even a mirror. There was a window, and I'm pushing a cart, I'm pushing a basket, and I look to the right, and for the first time, I actually see myself different. I was like, wait, who is that guy? And I got to the biggest that I was that I've ever been in my life, even after playing. I wasn't this big, and I got up to 344 pounds. And from there, man, that really took a shift in my mindset. And I'll tell you right now, dude, I remember it like it was yesterday, March 26, 2016. I remember it like it was yesterday. That was the day where I shifted my mindset completely, man. And I started to cut out everything cold turkey because I saw that reflection of an individual that I didn't recognize. And so what I started to do is I worked out as if I was trying to change my lifestyle, not have a diet, right? I didn't want just to be a diet. I didn't want this to be a momentarily thing. I was committed to a lifestyle. And so I came home one day and I told my wife, I said, hey, I'm not eating dairy. I'm not eating carbs. I'm not eating red meat. I'm cutting all those things out, and I'm going to work out twice a day. I hope you help me on this journey. And when I gave her that news, she supported me. And dude, I cut out everything. When I tell you, I cut out everything from cheese to milk. And I found substitutes, you know, almond milk, almond cheese, all those different things, low carbs, high proteins and fats. I started to run a lot more. As an offensive lineman, we know running is our kryptonite. We hate running. That is the last thing that we would want to do. And I started to run a lot more. And then this kind of spiraled into coming out with my fitness brand, Big Ass Joggers, where I was nervous to jog and be judged early on. You know, it was very intimidating for me, even as an ex-NFL athlete, to go outside and run a mile and I'm drenched and I can't run anymore. And I was embarrassed by that because here's an athlete that was at the top of the totem pole in athletics, but couldn't even sustain a mile, and I looked out of shape. And so I started Big Ass Joggers because I want people to go out and jog unapologetically. And so I took that initiative and that mindset, and I shifted the way that I thought, and I started a movement on social media. And I started to get other people that were, you know, battling, you know, health and wellness, and they wanted to have a weight loss journey. And I started to incorporate that into my lifestyle and bring them along. I started a run club, and after that, man, I started to see the pounds just kind of drop, and they drop, and they drop, and once I look up, I'm 240 pounds to date, and I lost 100 pounds from March 26, 2016. And so it's been a hell of a journey, man. But I wouldn't take it back.
Firstly, congrats on all that. There's a couple different pieces I'd like to try to unpack there. But I've noticed this in a lot of people, whether it's, you know, really committing to change your health for the better, or to give up a smoking addiction, or anything that's not serving you, that's a habit. And I guess, how would you synthesize what exactly it was on that March 16th date or March 26th date that made you commit to changing? Because I do think that a lot of people in those situations who do break the habit and do get on a better, more sustainable path, they really like get in head first and they commit to it. But what do you think it is in that moment that makes you commit in a sustained manner?
I think what makes you commit is understanding that the unknown could be so bright and big, right? I'm so fascinated with what can come, right? My life has always been thinking and dreaming in the moment, but inspiring to being something different. And this might sound cheesy, and this might sound, it was a little embarrassing, but I was motivated to have a six pack. That was my motivation. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, that was my motivation from day one. You know, offensive linemen, we get the stereotype that we're just going to be these big guys for the rest of our lives, right? Like, if you're that big playing football, then you're going to be that big for the rest of your life. And I wanted to prove to all the running backs and receivers and safeties that I played with that I can be in better shape than you after football. And that literally is what I held myself to in the initial phase. Now, granted, there was a lot of things mindset-wise and things that I wanted to commit to see if I can do it outside of football. Because having somebody tell you to run and then running yourself is two completely different things. So I wanted to see if I had the self-motivation to get out and run 4 miles on my own and not rely on a coach to tell me to run, you know, 4 miles for the team in my own conditioning. And like I said, I was committed, man. I wanted a six pack. And so it's funny because I call some of my old buddies that I played football with, and I'm like, dude, you almost weigh as much as me, and I'm in better shape than you right now. And it's so funny because you know how the football banter go back and forth. Oh, yeah. You have those moments where you're able to talk and you know, shoot little jokes here and there. But I was just truly motivated to inspiring people that if Luke can do it, anyone. And, you know, I post a picture on my Instagram the other day, and I was showing, you know, my happiness was the same as when I was 340 until now. The only thing that's changed is how happy my mindset is, but also to what I'm able to attract now with my mindset. And I think hitting that weight loss journey, it shocked me. I was like, holy, like I look in the mirror now and I'm like, wow, is that really who I am today? And I think that's the satisfaction I get out of it more, is that I've created a new image for me externally, but internally as well, that image has been, you know, that image has come out of me that's always been honed inside of me. I just had 340 pounds covered. So that's it.
Definitely, definitely. Also, you mentioned starting the run club and sort of building community around that. How has that flourished over the years? And what has that community accountability and having people who hold you to doing what you're saying you're going to do, been able to benefit you?
You're not allowed a day to say that you don't want to do it, right? When you have other people that are inspired by you, you're always on. So your accountability has to be above 100%, because the 100% is for the people and the above is for you just mentally telling yourself that you got to get out and do it for you. And so for me, you know, it's great because I get to see individuals be inspired and be moved by a story, but be moved by themselves of unlocking this potential that they never knew that was there. And I think that's what weight loss and health journeys do, is that it's exciting to individuals to see what they can do. It's the unknown. If they just commit to something, change in your mindset and what can change for your body, it's imperative. And for me being kind of the poster child of that transformation, because it is my run club, but for me kind of stepping into that position as the CEO and showing people that I can inspire them and I can do it, it gives them all the confidence in the world to show that they can do it also. And it's very, very reassuring, man, but it's also impactful for me, and it keeps me motivated when I have people come to me and say, hey, dude, you've helped me through my entire weight loss journey. And I just want to thank you for your motivation and inspiration, because without your inspirational words every morning, I don't know if I can do that. That's all I ever look for. And this is a free run club. I'm not charging anything, no fees or anything. This is a free run club for the community to come out and just be like-minded individuals, and iron sharpens iron. And that's what we're doing. And every single day that we do it, or every single week that we do it, it's just a blessing, man. And I can't thank the people that support this enough for their commitment and their level of commitment to it for themselves, but also to the growing community.
That's so fun. As an avid runner, you have my promise that I am I'm going to jump in on this as well. Maybe tomorrow. I'm planning on doing a long run tomorrow. So
okay.
long run for me is like 4 to 6.
Yeah.
And so I'll be sure to have the details in the show notes. What is it exactly? And then we can sort of link to people can jump in on it if they'd like.
Yeah, it's called, I'll spell it out. It's BIGA as an apple, 88 Jogger Run Club. So it stands for Big Ass Joggers Run Club. And you can find me on social at Lou_BIGA88 Jogger. And that's where you can find all the information about us posting everything and that nature. But yeah, man, we'd love to have you. If you're ever on the West Coast, you know, hit me up, man. We'd love to have you a part of it.
That's amazing. I am certain that we will get a run together in person at some point in life. We'll make a pact to make sure that happens.
Let's do it.
Just a couple more questions if you got time for it.
Yeah, for sure.
Great. I guess what's something that you can do now that you never thought you'd be able to do?
Wow, man, that's an interesting question. I think it goes back to the running. I never thought, well, it's twofold, I would say. First off, from a physical standpoint, I would never think that I could run more than 6 miles. I never thought that was a possibility. You know, I would always short and stop myself at a mile because, you know, you grow up in high school and junior high school and you have the mile test, right? Who can run the fastest time for a mile? And that, and your test was like 12 minutes. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And that's all I wanted to do, was just to run and do a mile test and be the best at it and pass it. And I used to fail it all the time, to be honest with you, because I was so overweight, I used to fail it. but now being able to run 4 to 6 miles with ease and being able to do that at a pace where, you know, some guys that run marathons, they run at that pace. You know, I'm running sub eight minute miles right now, you know, for a distant run, and being 240 to be able to do that is a accomplishment for me. So that's one thing that I'm excited about. But also too, I think one of the things that, and I say twofold, is I would have never thought that I would be in this position to inspire and motivate and be a storyteller every single day to other individuals. You know, I've always used my upbringing as a vessel to drive towards what I wanted to accomplish, but I never knew that it was going to be a vehicle to spark change in individuals. And I think now I'm able to turn my pain into passion, and I'm able to teach and help cultivate every single person I come and encounter with my story. And that is, it's still surreal to me. It's still surreal to me. And sometimes I have to pinch myself, because I've always been in the likings of service and being able to be of service every single day and to help other individuals grow, and seeing people buy homes for their families and seeing people, you know, get that next promotion. And I've been able to help with that trajectory. It's just huge for me, man. So I would say those are the two things that I would say the most that stand out.
That's incredible. And I just want to take a moment to to recognize you for your inspiration and your willingness to put so much positive energy and effort into the lives of others. And to, you know, you can feel, albeit via Zoom, your passion for service and your genuine interest in others and building others up. And so I want to recognize you for that. Final question here. What lessons from football would you say have translated to your best life after football and life after the line?
Yeah, I would say the biggest life lesson for me, man, is just being able to find passion, but also being able to drive no matter what the circumstance is, right? Football has taught me that if you're down 20, that's okay. You're just down 20. But you have one play to go grab a touchdown. You have four plays, or you have whatever the case may be, to go score. And in life today, I'm able to approach life with that mentality of, I may be down 21 today, right? I may have a bad day. I may have a bad meeting, or people might not understand what I'm doing currently as I'm in a leadership role. But I have another day to make that up to them so they can understand that everything that we're doing is in place for us to win. And I think now it's given me that ability to have that grit, that determination, that structure I mentioned in my day-to-day to drive and pursue towards anything I want to accomplish. And football has given me that relentlessness that I don't think anyone can teach you. And I'm so happy that football just, again, was the vehicle to serve that. And being an offensive lineman, I was always unselfish, and being able to be a person of service because I was always blocking for other people to be in the newspaper. And now that I still have that same core competency of that type of motivation, it's still a part of my day to day. And now I can still be that person of service. I can be that person that is blocking for other individuals to help them be in the paper because I am unselfish innately, and it's allowing me to do that. And football has given me that vehicle, man. So I thank football for just the willingness to be unselfish and be of service.
Mm-hmm. That definitely resonates. And I try to keep that going in my life as well. And I love the parts that you mentioned as well regarding having a next play, and no matter what happened before or what the current state is, you have the next play, or it's always sort of day one, you know? And so yeah,
exactly. It's always, exactly, man. Exactly. And I'll tell you one thing I don't miss is Hell Week. So I'm glad that that's over.
Definitely. Yeah. So many days of running hills and doing up downs and everything. It's good to recreate our own exercise and personal punishment through running. I like that a little better. But
Exactly. I agree with you 100%, man. I agree with you. I don't need anyone blowing a whistle and telling me one more anytime soon. So I'm good where I'm at now.
Definitely. Well, Lou, this has been incredible. I appreciate the time, and we'll make sure to have everything in the show notes on how to reach you, how to stay connected with you, and how to engage with you. But yeah, I guess if there's anything else you'd like to say in closing, go for it. Otherwise, I hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah, no, thank you, man. Thank you. And again, I just want to thank you for, like I mentioned before, giving us ex-offensive linemen the platform to demonstrate the great things that we're doing of service and being contributors to society. And I think this is really awesome, man, the platform that you're giving to individuals like myself and many others to come. And I can't wait to collaborate on something else more, man. I can see this definitely being something greater than it is now, man. So thank you for your time, truly, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Lou. You're inspiring me going into the weekend. So I'll be doing awesome. Some thinking and come back with some creative ideas from this. I appreciate it.
Awesome, man. Sounds good, man. Thank you so much.
Great.
This episode is sponsored by Mad Rabbit Tattoo. Mad Rabbit is reinventing the tattoo care space with their proprietary tattoo balm. It's formulated with just a few clean and natural ingredients that revitalize, replenish, and preserve your body art. I've been using Mad Rabbit for multiple weeks now, and it's given my tattoos a much brighter and more rejuvenated look. Purchase some or subscribe today at madrabbittattoo.com.